Welcome into the install with Greg Cosell of NFL Films, Buck Rising, here for another episode. Greg, an incredibly fun weekend of not just professional football, but college. Did you get time to watch any college football during your tape grinding?
I watched a ton of it. Yeah, I watched the entire Alabama A&M game. I watched a good amount of the Iowa-Penn State game. I've suddenly become a Kentucky fan. I have no idea why, so don't ask me, because there's no rational reason for it whatsoever. So I was watching them against LSU a little bit, switching back and forth. I usually miss although I did see the final quarter and of the Oklahoma-Texas game, which, you know, wasn't too bad either.
Yeah, that's the one that mattered, turns out, unfortunately, yeah. If you're a Texas fan. Yeah, but certainly a lot of fun games in the world of college football. It's okay to be trendy. You can be a Kentucky bandwagoner, Greg. I won't judge you, even though I went to Indiana.
I have no idea why, Buck. I really have no idea why. But I just started watching them maybe week one or two of the season, and I just kind of like to watch them.
That's because their quarterback went viral eating a whole banana peel and all. I'm sure that's why Greg Cosell is a Kentucky football fan.
But it's
fan.
Funny that you say that. It's interesting because and people, obviously, I'm sure in Lexington and maybe in the entire SEC know that their offensive coordinator is Liam Cohen, and he spent the last couple of years with the Rams. So they are essentially in many ways running a lot of the Rams offense. So maybe that's one reason I'm kind of drawn to it. But anyway, I kind of like watching. I don't even know who they play this week or what time they're on, but.
I'll tell you, it's Georgia. I'll tell you, it's Georgia. So it might be a good one worth watching, Greg. Time away from the tape.
I think that's the 3:30 CBS game, actually. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, it should be an exciting one to watch. This is why you come to the install, because I'll make a stupid joke and Greg will turn it into actually intelligent football analysis. And we've got a lot of good football analysis for you over the course of today's episode. But we got to start with the local professional football team before we move on to some of the bigger games this weekend and some of the more exciting results from week five of the NFL season. I mean, Greg, with the Titans and the Jags, I don't know what to make of that game, just because the Titans looked so sloppy and still almost won by 20 points. Their evolution is not coming along the way that I think they would like for it to, because they are still limited from a personnel standpoint. But was there anything that stood out to you that was different, having A.J. Brown back, Marcus Johnson as a third down target? What kind of caught your attention about the Titans this week?
Well, I think ultimately, because the goal every Sunday in the NFL, Buck, is to win the game, and they're not worried about 5 years down the road. So right now, their best way to win games is to run Derrick Henry. And Derrick Henry is on pace for 482 carries right now. Obviously there's a 17 game season, but 482 carries, I don't care how big or how strong or how great shape Derrick Henry's in, that's too many carries. And I'm really curious to see as they go forward what the plan is, but they had to get back on track. They've got to win games. Now, just to make a quick transition here, they're Monday Night Football this week against Buffalo, correct?
That is correct.
You would probably, there's two philosophical ways to play when you play a team that you believe will score. My guess is that Mike Vrabel does not believe that Tennessee is going to win this game 17-13. That would be my guess. So if you believe you have to put up high 20s, maybe 30s to win this game, the question becomes, what is your philosophical approach? Do you take the approach which is, you know, old as whatever, what's that expression? I can't remember it, but
old as time,
correct. The approach that's old as time, football time anyway, let's run the ball, let's eat up clock, let's control the pace and tempo of the game, let's keep Josh Allen and that offense on the sideline, and that's the way we want to play this game. Or is the approach, hey, they know Derrick Henry is our main offensive weapon. Everybody knows he's going to get the ball. So in this given game, let's not ignore Henry. That's not my point. But let's maybe on first down, out of run personnel, run formations, take some shots, do some play action, take some shots, and see if we can create some explosive plays that allow us to put 7 on the board. Yeah. So there's two ways to approach it philosophically. And I'm not sure how they would approach it, but clearly Derrick Henry has been not only the foundation, the only part of this offense that's been really working well through, the last 3-4 weeks?
Yeah, certainly since Seattle and that overtime win against the Seahawks. Now, it does help them, and we'll see how this progresses over the course of this week at practice, but I went out to practice today because Julio Jones returned to practice for the first time in the better part of 2 weeks, so hopefully they can improve on their – they've only had six what would be considered explosive plays on the season so far, and a couple of them are coming on Jeremy McNichols' third and eternity screens that they're not going to be able to rely on.
Well, it's funny you say that because McNichol actually had a 25-yard reception this past week on 3rd and 6. Yep. It was the second third down of the game. That was a really, really well-designed concept by Todd Downing because what they did is it came out of an empty set, and it was a stacked distribution to the twin side, to the two receiver side, where McNichols was off the ball just outside of Firkser. And that forced the linebacker, because the Jags were playing cover one and they played out of nickel. So it was a linebacker that was on McNichols, and he had to play off the ball. He had to play with what we call depth and width because of the stacked look, the stacked distribution. And then what McNichols did is he basically ran underneath Firkser, who was basically a natural pick, natural rub, but it was legal. And Wilson was automatically in recovery mode. It was a really well-designed 3rd and 6 play, and it presented a defined read and throw for Tannehill. Those are the kinds of things you have to do when you don't have your top receivers, or you haven't had enough work with your top receivers. We know A.J. Brown was on the field this week, but he'd missed time. They haven't had a lot of work. He hasn't had a lot of work with Julio Jones, who ideally is back this week. So you have to try to create opportunities by design. You can't just say, hey, we got Julio, we got AJ. You know what? If it's one-on-one, we feel good about them winning. They haven't had enough work for that.
Yeah, and it's something that Todd Downing has shown flashes of, certainly, given the limited personnel that he's had. He's had to be pretty creative with how they try and move the ball up and down the field. But let's talk about Buffalo quickly, Greg, before we get to Buffalo's about as fun a team as you can find in the NFL right now, but I know we're going to spend some time on the Chargers in Dallas, and it's hard to get more fun than those two at this point. Buffalo, they're scoring more points than anybody in football right now. They're allowing fewer points than anybody in football right now. Are there any weaknesses to this Bills team at this point that you've observed through 5 weeks of film?
I wouldn't say any defined weakness where you say, oh, boy, you can really get after that and you're in great shape. No, I don't think there's that. But I will say this. What they did against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, I don't believe they'll do this week against the Titans. They played 95, maybe 98% of their snaps against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs with split safety, two shell coverage, both zone concepts and two-man coverage, by the way, which, just as an aside, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense has struggled versus two-man coverage going back to the Super Bowl last year. There's reasons for that, which, again, the Chiefs play Washington. We were not necessarily going to talk about that game. But anyway, let me get back to Buffalo. So the point being is that Buffalo against Tennessee, with the Derrick Henry factor and the run game, and the use of base personnel packages, two tight ends, three tight ends, a fullback, they are not going to play this game with a majority of their snaps with the two shell safety look. They're going to get a safety who's down in the box. So this is going to be a different defense for Buffalo than the one we saw against Kansas City. And it was obviously a great performance.
Yeah, it was an incredible performance to watch them. Even as the weather delay at halftime kind of slowed things down, you weren't sure how they'd come out in the second half, and the Kansas City Chiefs defense is really, really struggling right now across the board from injuries and all manner of different issues. So let's take a look at some games coming up this weekend, Greg.
Well, I think just before we do that, I think we got to say something about the Bills offense, because Josh Allen, to me, given his size, because size is a trait, Buck.
Yeah.
Just like size is a trait for Justin Herbert, you can make the argument that Josh Allen is the most physically gifted quarterback in the NFL. And I've made that argument. I made it over the summer, and right away people said, you know, I'm an idiot because, oh, Patrick Mahomes. And it's no knock on Patrick Mahomes, but Patrick Mahomes is 6'2", 210. Josh Allen is 6'5", 240. And that size is a trait. And Josh Allen is so physically gifted. And when he's throwing the ball with more precise ball location, as he's done the last number of weeks, and as he did almost all of 2020 last year when he had the phenomenal year, he is a really difficult player to defend. I mean, the touchdown he threw to Emmanuel Sanders was just a seed. And then he's got the running ability. You know, that's where that size and the athleticism that goes with that is such a factor. And with Sanders now there this year, they are really deep at wide receiver. And Dawson Knox, who SEC folks will remember, was the underutilized tight end at Ole Miss when they had A.J. Brown, D.K. Metcalf, and DeMarcus Lodge. You know, he was an underutilized player because there's only one football. He's a very athletic player, and he's now becoming a pretty significant part of what they do with their pass game.
Nashville's own Dawson Knox. He's people are very, very intimately familiar with the Bills tight end around here. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy to see just, and we've talked about this before, Greg, with the just the jump that Josh Allen has made in terms of his ball location, his ball accuracy, and the fact that it's coming on from 40, 50 yards out. I mean, he is just slinging it in there in ways that I don't think I've seen outside of Justin Herbert here recently. I don't know that I've seen a quarterback with those kind of physical gifts as you just described.
Yeah, and Herbert is a little different, as we can transition to that game. You know, Herbert and Allen are kind of different. They're the same size. They both have elite arms. Herbert is a little more, and I say this in a good way, not in a bad way. Herbert's a little more robotic and mechanical in the way he throws it. He's much more technique driven, you know, step, throw, looks really good doing it. Allen has the ability to make those kinds of throws almost from any position, you know, and I'm not a big believer in, hey, throw it underhand, throw it sidearm, but Allen just, and he's probably done that his whole life, he just has a unique ability to make throws without what you'd say are precision mechanics. I mean, if you go back and look at that touchdown that we spoke about a moment ago to Sanders, I mean, that was not precision mechanics, but that was a seed and it was perfectly placed. Herbert's a little different. Herbert has very good athletic ability as well. Not quite at the Allen level, but Herbert has great vision in the pocket. There's a sense of refinement to his game that you wouldn't have expected from a second-year quarterback. He actually showed it a year ago, Buck, as a rookie.
Oh, yeah, without question. I mean, that's one of those situations. I don't know, and we were talking before we went to air about the 33rd team and Mike Tannenbaum. He was so spot on about Herbert in a way that he was out there on an island for a long time throughout the course of the draft process, and he absolutely nailed that one. And it was clear and obvious to everybody. They kept losing those one-score games last year with Anthony Lynn, but you could clearly see that the talent was so far superior from the rest of the guys in that class, and just he was able to get a mastery of it at a much more rapid rate.
And keep in mind, this is a brand new offense, and he looks like he's been playing in it for 5 years.
Yeah,
because this is Joe Lombardi, who came from the Saints, and there's a lot of those principles. You know, sometimes you watch Herbert, and we struggle with this on the matchup show, because when we do pieces with a quarterback, we're looking for, you know, a really nice route concept, route combination that we can break down. We don't do pieces just to say, wow, look at that. That's a great throw. We don't do that. We do breakdowns. And he's a hard guy sometimes to do with a breakdown because everything is so refined and the ball comes out. So a lot of times he just throws it to the first read because he knows who it is. He knows how to get it to him. So he hits the back foot and the ball's out. Yeah. He looks so refined for a guy who's in his first year in this given offense.
Without question. And he certainly looked incredibly at ease against the Cleveland Browns on Sunday. That game was as much fun as I've had rewatching a game. I didn't get to see it live because they didn't have it on the press box in Jacksonville after the Titans and the Jags concluded. But to watch that back on Game Pass, I mean, the difference in that game ended up being the quarterbacks. And I know that Baker is playing through some shoulder issues right now and that the Browns are a much more run-driven offense than at this point any other offense in the sport, but to watch Herbert just with ease go up and down. And I know the Browns defense was missing a couple of parts and they were not what they project to be when
they've
fully
been good
healthy.
Up to that game. That's
they
the
have
thing.
Been good.
I had watched the Browns defense. I think I missed one game prior to this week. I'd seen them in three games. And I kept coming away from the Browns defense, particularly when I saw them the week before against Minnesota, when they held Minnesota to one touchdown. And I'm thinking, this defense, they have talent. They're fast. They're well coached. They had a few mistakes, which I'm sure, you know how coaches are. They lose sleep over that stuff because the two Mike Williams long touchdowns, there were mistakes involved. I don't want to use the word bust because I don't know exactly how it's coached. And I don't want to say a player screwed up when maybe it wasn't him because I don't know that. But yeah, Clearly there were assignment mistakes or distortions in coverage that were not correct. Unfortunately, they resulted in two long touchdowns.
Yeah, it's tough to lose track of a guy like Mike Williams, and the Browns did it a couple of times in that game on Sunday. But now the Chargers, they get a crack at the Ravens. The Ravens coming off a very dramatic win over the Indianapolis Colts. Did you watch that one live, or was this tape study after the fact?
Oh, no. It made me stay up way too late. So if I fall asleep in the next 5 minutes, you'll understand why.
Well, so, I'll just blame it on myself, and I'll lose sleep at night like a coach afterwards.
I actually went to bed. I did not watch the overtime. I went to bed after Blankenship missed the field goal at the end of regulation because I just knew that it was over at that point. But I think the more important element to that game to me was Lamar Jackson, because that was his best game as a pro other than running. You know, we've seen him have unbelievable games running.
Yeah.
But in doing the research and in going through the plays, what do people say about Lamar? They've set up to this point that if he has to drop back and throw, okay, straight, you know, drop back where there's no play action, no run game elements and dimensions that are so foundational to what they do, Buck, if he just has to drop back and throw it, that's not what he does best. Well, in this given game, because of the way it played out, and I've got the numbers, drop back throws, 29 for 33 for 343 yards and 4 touchdowns.
It was crazy.
That was the best. And I know that some people will say, well, he was going against 3 street free agents in the secondary. And by the way, is that a factor? Yes, can't be denied. But he threw the ball exceptionally well, better over the course of a full game than he's ever thrown it. And I you know, if they can start look, I don't think they're going to step totally away from all the run game elements because he's so difficult to defend. But if he, and he's not going to be 29 for 33 for 343 every week. No one is. But if they can develop and generate a more consistent week-to-week pass game, then it becomes a really good offense because they have weapons at receiver. Now, I know Sammy Watkins got hurt again. I don't know. It's a hamstring, so who knows. But I know they get Bateman either this week or next week. He's close.
Yeah, well, and how, I mean, we don't know what Greg Roman is coaching them to do. We understand, and Greg helps us understand conceptually what the Ravens like to do on offense or have done
right
at this point. But how eye-opening can that be for a coaching staff, Greg, to see the way that he's winning from the pocket in the second half? You know that he has otherworldly ability. He's right. MVP of the NFL, for God's sakes. But yeah, how eye-opening can that be to a coaching staff?
Well, they wanted to get to this point last year, but unfortunately COVID took away the offseason. Yeah. So you can't do this through Zoom. You know, you have to be on the field with the guy. You got to work through things. You know, this has to be on field and classroom stuff where you're together, you know. So they couldn't do it last year. Look, this is the point they wanted to get to. You know, they want to get, then you get a guy who's a true multidimensional threat because their run game still has him as the foundation. You know, as gifted as Josh Allen is, and he's, you know, he's 6'5", as I said, 240. Lamar is not. Lamar's actually kind of thin. I've been around him. But just the nature of their run game is he's the foundation, and that makes it so hard to defend.
So how will the Chargers attempt to defend that? Because Brandon Staley, of course, defensive-minded football coach, has done a great job with that Chargers team up and down the roster on both sides of the football. How will they attempt to stop Lamar Jackson and the Ravens?
Well, let me call him right now and we'll find out. Yeah. That's a hard question. You know, I and I'm being honest, I'm not smart enough to know the answer to that. I mean,
that's fair.
Yeah, I you know, I don't think all of a sudden the Ravens are going to come out and be a drop back passing team. I think the game demanded it. And now they know if a game, another game demands it, hey, they've got that theoretically in their arsenal. But I don't think they're going to dramatically change how they play. Now, don't forget, they're down running back, so it's a little different than it was a year ago. But I still think the element of Lamar as a runner and as a foundational runner is critical to what they do, for the simple reason that it's so hard to defend.
Yeah, and it's been, God forbid, that they add an extra dimension to his yeah. game. The rest of the AFC is already having to deal with Patrick Mahomes, now Justin Herbert, and an improved Lamar Jackson would mean bad news.
Well, I imagine Bills Mafia would say the rest of the AFC now has to deal with Josh Allen, so you might want to, you know.
Listen, I'm not trying to take any respect off the Bills right now, Greg, nor Bills Mafia, because they terrify me. Because you've been on the pedestrian bridge in Nashville. I've seen them take a full running dive off the pedestrian bridge and hit a car table full speed. I don't mess with those people. Not one time. Let's talk about another incredibly fun team to watch this season. The Dallas Cowboys will face the New England Patriots. New England's defense, they've been okay. They're about middle of the pack as far as defending the run is concerned. They're allowing about 111 yards per game. Dallas, one of the most diverse rushing attacks, on top of what Dak Prescott is doing with those skill position players. What are you seeing from the Cowboys right now, Greg?
Cowboys have gone old school, Buck. They're back to almost to Dak Prescott's rookie year, second year, where the run game's the foundation. Zeke's running really well. Their first down rushing numbers are off the charts. You know, Dak's not throwing the ball 40, 45, 50 times as he did a year ago in his four games, or as he did week one versus Tampa. So the last four games, they have been a run-based team. And that works when you can then make big plays in your pass game. And Dak can do that because Dak has reached the point where he's a high-level quarterback. So even though they don't have to throw it 40 times to generate big explosive plays, they can generate big explosive plays in the pass game, throwing it 25 or 30 times. And that's where they are right now. You know, you saw in the touchdown to CD Lamb, they've been able to make big plays to Amari Cooper. So they're a really interesting offense. Their O-line has played much better. Terrence Steele, the right tackle, who was forced to play a year ago and was bad, quite frankly, I'm just telling you what the film would tell you, is one of the most improved unknown players in the league this year. He has become, every time I put on Dallas tape, and particularly in the run game, I watch this guy, and he's just mauling people. So he's one of the most improved tackles in the league. So they're a really interesting mix because they're running the ball exceptionally well. They've got a really high-level quarterback, and they've got weapons on the outside. So Cedric Wilson, who I remember studying him coming out of Boise State 3 or 4 years ago, he's become a pretty significant factor with Michael Gallup still out. So they kind of bring a truly multidimensional offense to the table.
How much more difficult is that run game to defend? Because it's not just Zeke. Tony Pollard has been really, really effective running the football too. They seem to be Kellen Moore seems to be very, very creative with the run plays that he's calling and the designs that they're coming up with. How much more effective does having that second option out of the backfield make this running attack?
I think it makes it really effective because he's a different back. He's got a little more juice. So here you play Zeke, and Zeke is powerful. Zeke's got really good quickness, short area quickness, and confined space. Zeke's a great confined space runner, but he doesn't have the kind of juice that Pollard has. So they're, in some ways, they're different backs. They often give them different run concepts. Pollard's running exceptionally well also. His first down rushing numbers are great. So it is a two-headed monster, and this is a tough team to match up to. I'm curious, because the Patriots are normally a pretty heavy man-to-man defense. They play a lot of cover one. They do have a lot of multiplicity with their front looks, and I'll be really curious to see how Belichick handles that against a team that he knows is going to line up and run the ball.
Well, and I want to talk about the Patriots side of things here in just a second, but I'm just out of curiosity, Greg, between the Chargers and the Cowboys right now, who do you enjoy watching more when you're going back and rewatching the film? Or can it be both?
Yeah, it's both. That's hard for me to answer. They're different. Sure. I mean, Cowboys are a running football team. The the Chargers are, for the most part, a passing team. Eckler is a really nice piece, but he's not a foundational piece in the way that Zeke is. Although he fits what the Chargers do really, really well, because he's a big time receiver and an underrated runner, but not a true foundation back. Sure. So yeah, they're different, but they're both really enjoyable for me to watch.
Yeah, they're putting on a show for everybody at this point. So Davis Mills gave New England a much harder time than at least any of us laymen were expecting, watching at home and seeing how close that game got down to the wire. What were the Texans, because they've obviously adapted their offensive philosophy going from Tyrod Taylor now to Davis Mills at quarterback. He's struggled, but he seemed to, I don't know how sustainable it is, but he seemed to look a lot more comfortable against a defense that not many people look comfortable against. Yeah. What were the Texans doing to kind of bother the Patriots on defense?
Well, they really helped him. I mean, he did play with a poise and awareness, and he certainly looks the part the way he throws the ball. But I thought they helped him be decisive with their play calling and their play designs. They featured a lot of quick game. They featured the screen game. They had play action. They had play action boot. The kinds of things that allow the quarterback to be decisive. It helps define the reads for him. And every coach theoretically tries to do this. Some do it better than others. They did a really nice job in this game. And I thought that, you know, he handled it really, really well. Now, keep one thing in mind. You're dealing with a team in New England that does not have a great pass rush. They don't really have, I mean, Matthew Judon is a good player, and he can be a good pass rusher. But, you know, he's not that one guy you say, oh, my God, you better stop him or else.
Yeah.
You know, he's not quite that guy. It was actually an intriguing game to watch because Davis Mills did not look like a rookie quarterback in that game.
No. And that's something that Bill Belichick is famous for feasting off of his rookie quarterbacks in that game. Of course, the analysis does not stop here, even though the podcast has come to an end. The NFL matchup show, make sure that you're DVRing it. You're catching it on ESPN. Sal Powell, Matt Bowen, Greg breaking it all down at length. Greg, what games can the people expect to see you guys break down the matchups in that we didn't get the chance to cover today?
Browns Cardinals is a big game, very intriguing game. That game's in the show. Obviously Titans Bills will be in the show. Dallas, we spoke about Dallas New England, that's in the show. Full segment on Chargers and Ravens. We also have Bears Packers, which, you know, in an odd way, people have been ripping the Bears all year. They're 3-2 playing at home with against a division rival. That game usually is an intriguing game. So we're going to do that game in the show as well.
Make sure you're watching it. Make sure you're recording it. Make sure that you're getting as smart as humanly possible before the action begins on Sunday. And of course, Monday Night Football with the Titans and the Bills. Greg, enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy the football to come. And we'll look forward to catching up with you again next week, my brother.
Thanks, Buck. Appreciate it.